entertainment, sports, and radio's best guest list. Live from the Zone Radio Studios on Broadway on WZON Z62, WKIT HD3, and at downtownwithrichkimble.com. This is Downtown.
Well, hello there, and a good Sunday morning to you on this 13th day of the month of January. It's the best of Downtown. Rich Kimble, Carrie Haskell here. We are brought to you this morning and every weekday afternoon by Cross Insurance, where security meets strength. Our weekly look back at some of our favorite conversations, and we'll bring a few of them on board for you this morning. We'll talk with actor and storyteller Stephen Tobolowsky about the brand new season of One Day at a Time that will be released in just a few weeks' time on Netflix. Also, talk Patriots playoff game this afternoon against the Los Angeles Chargers, but we thought we'd warm up this cold winter weekend with a little baseball talk. A recent visit with Peter Abraham of the Boston Globe as we talked about the offseason and what's ahead when the Red Sox report soon for spring training. Taking time from your vacation to be with us, I appreciate that.
No problem. I'm going away tomorrow, but I got time tonight. Absolutely.
Well, good. Well, let's talk about what's going on with the Red Sox. A few things done here in the offseason, but still that big question mark over the bullpen. Is this waiting game going to pay off for Dave Dombrowski?
Well, I think so. It reminds me a lot of what happened last year with J.D. Martinez, that it made for the Red Sox to sign J.D. Martinez. It made sense for him to go to the Red Sox. But they didn't move too quickly and give him too much money. They got what amounted to a reasonable deal. He got the opt-outs in that contract that he wanted, and it worked out obviously very well. They won the World Series, and he was a terrific player. I think it's going to be similar this year with what they do with the bullpen. Whether it's Craig Kimbrell or somebody else, I think they're going to wait and let the market develop a little bit more and then see where Kimbrell is at maybe 10 days from now and see if there's a deal to be made there. I suspect it would be a lot more economical than it would have been if they had tried to do it a month ago.
Looks like they've been doing a little prospecting as well with the number of veteran arms that they're bringing in as non-roster invitees.
Yeah, and I don't know that any of those guys are necessarily going to impact the big league team. I think it's a lot of depth options. Their farm system is such that most of their prospects are in the lower levels, not in AA and AAA, particularly in terms of relief pitching. So I think they want to protect themselves. But at the same time, they need to fill out that AAA roster, too. So there's going to be, compared to last year, certainly, a lot more of those kind of guys in the organization than we've seen in the last couple of years.
Well, it's been an interesting change that we've seen, really, over the last couple of seasons in the free agent process. The winter meetings are pretty slow. How much of this is on agents? How much is on owners? And do you anticipate any changes in the system going forward?
Well, as somebody who covers baseball for a living, I watch the NFL and the NBA with great envy because they seem to complete their free agency very quickly. In the case of the NBA, the players make deals before they're allowed to even sign, and then they sign right away. And it seems like it takes 72 hours for everybody to get a contract. And baseball, it drags on for 3 months, 4 months, and it seems like needlessly. And Dombrowski talked about that at the winter meetings, that every other event in baseball, whether it's draft picks or the trade deadline during the season or arbitration-eligible players, there's a deadline that everyone adheres to and they manage to make a deal. But in the offseason, there is no deadline. And I don't know what would be a day to make it, whether it would be January 15th and then you can't sign again until April 1st or something like that. But there certainly should be a way to speed this whole process up and kind of put an end to all the posturing and agents thinking that they're going to do better. And I think if you have a deadline, human nature is such that people will make the deadline.
Well, other than the bullpen, there aren't a lot of big questions out there for Red Sox management when the team reports for spring training. Second base situation, is that going to be a situation where they try to find a veteran like a Kinsler to hold the fort? Are they happy with Nunez? What do you think might happen there?
Well, it wouldn't surprise me if they were to sign a player maybe on a minor league contract or to a lesser big league contract that could play second base. But I don't even know if they need to do that because you look at – they have Eduardo Nunez, they have Brock Holt, and they have Zhuwei Lin, who they like very much. And all of those guys can play second base. So I don't know that if Pedroia was unable to play, if the physical limitations were such that he couldn't play, I think they would be pretty well covered, whether it would be – more Brock Holt or more Zhuwei Lin. Even Nunez isn't ideal in terms of defensively at second base, But as a hitter, you could certainly give them what they need. I don't know that they would go out and get an expensive second baseman, at least right now, because they don't know what the deal is with Pedroia. So going out and doing that now without knowing kind of where you're at, I don't know if that would make a whole lot of sense.
And they're confident, too, that Rafael Devers is the guy that we saw in postseason and not the player that struggled at times in the second half.
Yeah, Cora feels very strongly about Devers, and that he can't play third base, that they've spent a lot of time in the offseason talking to him about getting himself in better physical condition, and they feel like he's their third baseman who's a lot better than he was last year. They thought he put a lot of pressure on himself to kind of duplicate what he had done in his rookie year when he was so productive that he tried to hit for more power maybe than he needed to and didn't focus on, you know, the basics of it. I could not strike out as often. And Cora feels like, whether it's working with J.D. Martinez or working with the coaching staff, that there's a lot more in him to get. Well, you know, let's not forget, this is only a young player. So, yeah, I think they're very comfortable with him as the third baseman.
The outfield is obviously so talented, and they're all back for this year. What are the chances that there will be any discussions this season with Mookie Betts about some kind of a new contract while they have the chance, if they have the chance, to get him at any kind of a deal?
Well, there's sort of like two paths that are going on right now with Mookie Betts. One is that they need to get him signed in terms of just for next year, that he's arbitration eligible. They'd like to avoid a hearing. And very soon, by the 11th, they need to come up with a deal or the sides would exchange figures, and at that point it would be likely that they would go to an arbitration hearing. But at the same time, as they're discussing that contract for 2019, I'm sure the Sox are saying that they're open to do something long term. Ownership came right out and said last year that Mookie Betts is a guy they want to keep and that they're going to do everything they can to keep him, which clearly makes a lot of sense. Now, Mookie, for his part, has said he feels like he wants to go year to year and get himself to free agency and see what that offers. But there will be some sort of clarification in the market once Machado and Bryce Harper sign. Betts will have a better idea of what his worth is. And at that point, maybe he and the Red Sox could sit down and then have a, if not necessarily effective conversation, certainly a realistic conversation about what his value is and what the Red Sox would be willing to pay him.
We're talking with Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe. The Yankees' situation at shortstop, is that a pretty good risk for them to take with Tulowitzki?
Well, it's almost no risk because all they owe him is the major league minimum. Toronto
right.
is on the hook for the rest. So it really wouldn't cost them anything other than that. So that would seem to be as good a risk as you could possibly get, especially today. So I think they're betting on Tulowitzki being able to come back. And if he doesn't come back, Didi Gregorius is going to come back at some point during the season. So they would be, you know, at worst, waiting on their regular everyday shortstop from last year. So I for the Yankees, I think it made a lot of sense because they did need a shortstop. Tulowitzki was out there, and he's really not going to cost them any more than the major league minimum.
Have they improved themselves more than anybody else in the East?
Well, you know, they're kind of – it's interesting. A lot of the Yankee fans seem to want them to go out and get Machado. I don't know that it's necessarily that they get Machado. I think they're a pretty good team without him, and they won 100 games last year. Their bullpen looks like it'll be fairly status quo, even with losing David Robertson, because they'll bring Zach Britton back. So the pitching, from a starting pitching standpoint, they've improved. I would say right now that they look like the most improved team in the East, but that's kind of a low bar because Baltimore and Toronto and Tampa Bay haven't done anything, and the Red Sox didn't really need to do anything.
Pete, what do you think will happen in a couple of weeks when we see the results of the voting for this year's Baseball Hall of Fame class?
Well, it's interesting because there's a fellow out in California who tracks the voting, the votes that are public, and he keeps track of kind of the trends, who's going what way. And it certainly looks like Edgar Martinez and Mike Mussina are making a lot of progress to the point where certainly Edgar looks like he could get elected, and it's going to be close for Mike Mussina. So that would be an interesting kind of turn of events. And the other part of it that I'm really curious to see is how much Bonds and Clemens continue to move up. And they've trended up over the last few years as the electorate gets younger and, I guess, more forgiving of what the perception is of what they did. So I think this year, I don't believe either of them will get in this year, but I think where they land in the vote this year will be interesting in terms of what their future is and whether they have a chance to get elected by the voters, because it would seem very unlikely that they would ever be elected by a veterans committee.
What about the case of Curt Schilling? It seems like he's trending up a little bit.
Yeah, and despite his best efforts not to, I guess. He is trending up, and I think for a lot of us, Schilling, at least for me, you could disagree with a lot of the things that he said and some of the positions that he's put forward, but that has nothing to do with baseball. And for me, I've always voted for him ever since he's been eligible. Oddly, for some reason, he contends that I haven't, which is kind of weird because the vote is on the record at the BBWA website. But Curt tries to make it difficult on himself for whatever reason, but it seems like more writers are coming over to his side and kind of ignoring all of that secondary stuff.
Pete, away from baseball, before we let you go, I'm incredibly jealous of you. I was at the time, and then I saw the day it was released on Netflix, the Springsteen on Broadway, and man, oh man, you saw it in person. That is, I said at the time, one of the most incredible things I've ever watched on television. I can't imagine what it must have been like in person.
You know, it's funny, Rich, I've seen Springsteen a lot. I've seen a lot of different live music, and it was the first time I'd ever left the show. I don't even know if it was a show, it was a performance, because it was on Broadway. That there were people sitting in the seats who were like emotionally, overwrought at seats.
Yeah. So,
and they were just sitting there like almost stunned at what they had seen. And you know, it sounds pretty dramatic, and I'm sure I'm being a little goofy because I like Springsteen so much, but it really was the kind of show that stayed with you for a long time afterward. And to hear him talk as honestly as he did about his life and some of the troubles that he had and the delicate nature of, you know, failure or success and how, you know, he walked that line for a long time. It was a lot different than I think what people expected. I think they just thought it was going to be him playing his songs in a Broadway theater, and it really wasn't. And that's what made it so good. And I've spoken to a lot of people like you who didn't see the show in person but saw it on Netflix and were blown away by it.
Oh man, that soliloquy about growing up in New Jersey and what it was like in his childhood and the neighbors and the neighborhood itself.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it was poetry. It was brilliant.
Yeah, and, you know, I grew up in New Bedford in Massachusetts, and, you know, kind of a blue-collar town, and a lot of the things he talked about, I think a lot of people can relate to. I think it doesn't matter where you're from. You can identify certainly with, some kind of struggles to get where you want to get to, and it wasn't always, great. And I think everybody could, whether you like Springsteen or not, can relate to that message.
Peter Abraham here from the Boston Globe on Downtown. And that conversation with Pete came on Thursday before the Mookie Betts news. Of course, on Friday, Mookie signing a one-year, $20 million deal with the Red Sox. When we come back on Downtown, we'll preview the divisional playoff game, Patriots and the Chargers this afternoon. Christopher Price of Boston Sports Journal next on Downtown.
At Quirk Motor City, you get a huge selection of quality pre-owned vehicles priced to fit any budget. Plus, the Quirk Motor City pre-owned difference, with a limited warranty that's three times longer than the average dealer's pre-owned warranty. Free main state inspections for the life of the vehicle. A free Carfax vehicle history report. And Quirk Motor City's certified pre-owned 118-point inspection. It's your quality pre-owned car. Find it at Quirk Motor City in Bangor, Belfast, Augusta, and Portland. View our pre-owned inventory online at quirkauto.com.
It may not be prime biking season, but it's always a good time to make sure your cycle is in great shape. And there's only one place to go to do that. Slipping Gears Cycling, 753 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor. Bangor's only full-time cycling sales and service experts. They offer outstanding service and a huge stock. Make sure you like them on Facebook to get updates, shop in person or online at slippinggears.com.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
Pretty sure this should be considered a public service announcement, so in advance, you're welcome. I just went to the Ground Round in Bangor and ordered off their special menu and got the bacon chicken mac and cheese. It's curly cavatappi pasta with creamy gouda and cheddar sauce topped with applewood smoked bacon and perfectly grilled chicken. Luckily, I saved room for dessert because right now the Ground Round has this amazing Reese's empanada, and it's exactly what you'd imagine. Creamy chocolate and peanut butter inside a folded and fried pie crust. If your mouth is watering right now, head to the Ground Round on Audland Road in Bangor. GroundRound.com.
Success. For some, it's the result of luck. For the Maine Black Bears, it's the result of planning, determination, and hard work. Success may have brought you financial rewards, and now in many ways, life isn't simpler, it's more complex. Your choices impact more people and can have longer lasting effects than ever before. At ClearPoint Financial, we understand your challenges. We can help navigate today's changing financial landscape and help you pursue your financial goals. ClearPoint Financial, the official financial advisor of the Maine Black Bears.
Hi, this is Mike Toole. See what ClearPoint Financial can do for you. Call us today at 307-7718.
Welcome to Green Acres Kennel Shop. How many?
Two dogs and a cat, please.
Remember us?
Rex, Sparky, and me, Fiona.
Of course, this way. Your coats are all looking so shiny. Bowl for three.
Ruff!
I'll take a side plate. Dog food's not really my taste.
Rex, try the Nutrisource. Delectable.
Yes, Master Sparky. Green Acres Kennel Shop only wants you to have wholesome, healthy food. So we prefer to work with small, family-owned companies who focus on pet foods.
Any specials this evening, Paul?
Of course, Master Rex. The usual lineup of dog and cat foods from Pure Vita, Natural Planet Health Extension, Signature.
How are they prepared?
Green Acres offers dry food, wet, freeze-dried, even frozen raw food to fulfill your fussy feline fancy. Now, because you all come to Green Acres Kennel Shop so often, your meals are deeply discounted as part of our frequent buyer program.
Wow, sounds like we're the special ones.
Green Acres Kennel Shop, where every pet is special. 1653 Union Street, Bangor, greenacreskennel.com, and on Facebook. Takeout also available.
We love Green Acres Kennel Shop, our home away from home. Woof, woof.
Hey, we're back downtown Best Of on a Sunday morning. Rich Kimball, Carrie Haskell with you.
So hard, feeling the pain. I got pains in my head. My legs feel.
Up next, we talk football. Playoff football continues this afternoon. It's the divisional round as the Patriots play host the Los Angeles Chargers. We got the lowdown on Friday from Christopher Price of Boston Sports Journal. Chris, how are you this afternoon?
Good. How you doing, Rich?
I'm doing great. Looking forward to this. Interesting matchup of geezer quarterbacks with a lot to prove here. a shot at redemption for Phillip Rivers and Tom Brady with a chance to prove it once more.
Well, that's why they're not playing on Saturday night at 8 o'clock. You know, these old guys, they can't stay up that late. They're playing Sunday at 1 so they can get to the early bird buffet by 5 o'clock. Right? That's the plan.
Exactly.
That's what I'm told by the NFL.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It should be fun. It really should be fun because, you know, you're looking at two of the preeminent quarterbacks, obviously, in, you know, the last decade or so in the NFL. I talked to someone in Los Angeles today who basically said this is setting up to be Phillip Rivers' potential signature win, because you look at his career and he's put up phenomenal numbers ever since he's been in the league, won a bunch of games, but does not have that signature victory that these plus 35 quarterbacks need, that these guys who are, you know, on the cusp of the Hall of Fame, you know, want to go down as one of the best in the history. You look at so many of his other contemporaries, whether it's Roethlisberger, Manning, you know, any one of the guys who came into the league around about the same time he did, he does not have that signature win. He doesn't obviously have a Super Bowl win, but he doesn't have that signature win. This is setting up to be one of those games, a possibility for him to be able to check something off the list, you know, that big postseason victory. If he can get it this time around, I think it'd be awful big for him.
I don't really know what to make of the game with the Ravens last week. They were given a lot of golden opportunities, but most of them ended up as field goals. And then in the fourth quarter, when it seemed like the game might be safely in hand, the offense really began to sputter for the Chargers.
It did. And it's. I will say this. It is, no matter what you think of their occasional inconsistency in that department, you know, they haven't been able to put together, or they didn't, I'll say this last week, they didn't put together a full 60-minute game, but it was more than enough to win. This really strikes me as one of the more mentally tough teams the Patriots have faced in the postseason the last few years. Look, this is a Chargers team that's basically played around the world over the last, you know,
right,
3 months or so. You know, they've played overseas, they've come east, they've gone back west, whatever the case may be. And the ability to get on a plane and win games like that, it cannot be discounted. I know it's kind of broad brushing it when you're talking about, you know, what this team means, but they've been very impressed by the fact that they've been able to hang in, they've been able to win those games. And so, you know, you look at this team coming into this kind of game, they would seem well positioned to be the sort of roster that could push the Patriots. I still think New England is going to end up winning this thing, but I think the Chargers have a chance to make things uncomfortable for them for an extended period of time.
One of the more interesting roster moves we've seen in postseason football in recent years, the signing of Nick Rose, apparently just to kick off.
Yeah, because, and again, this is talking to people in Los Angeles, there were two things. They were worried about Badgley's leg strength, even though he connected on a 59-yarder earlier this year. The consistency on the kickoffs, especially in, let's just say, less than ideal weather, it's a little bit questionable. And so, you know, they wanted to get a guy who could kick off, kick out of the back of the end zone. The other thing, too, they're very mindful of Cordarrelle Patterson and his ability to kind of tilt the field in New England's favor. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, him just booted out of the back of the end zone all afternoon long and just kind of make sure that he remains a non-factor. But, yeah, I mean, at this time of year, you rarely see those sorts of personnel moves. But it was interesting to see the Chargers pull the trigger on that one.
We're talking with Christopher Price of Boston Sports Journal. Well, interesting defensive alignment last week against the Ravens, often with seven defensive backs out there. They're very thin at linebacker. Will the Patriots try to take advantage of that, and do they have the personnel to do so?
If I'm the Patriots, I want to run the ball. I really do. And that not only, you know, would force the Chargers. I don't think it's going to be a Xerox copy defensively of what they were able to do last week against Baltimore. But if the Chargers do end up running six and seven defensive backs out there, if I'm Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick, I just keep checking down to Sony Michel and James White and running the ball as often as possible and kind of daring them to load the box and kind of get out of their game plan a little bit. So this is going to be a big game for the running backs regardless, not just in that aspect of it, but the Patriots have seen this Gus Bradley, Dan Quinn sort of defense before in years past, and one of the vulnerabilities of this group is they give up an awful lot of yards in the passing game to running backs. And so you look at the work of James White this past season, certainly sets up to be a big game for the likes of him because, you know, as we know, he is one of the better pass-catching backs in the league, and going up against this defense, I think he's going to have a lot of opportunities on Sunday.
And certainly in the last regular season game, they diversified the offensive portfolio, finally getting Chris Hogan involved in the action. So if they can get the ball to those wideouts, it seems like they're a bit more involved than they were for much of the season.
Yeah, I think at the same time, though, Rich, I wouldn't be surprised if the Patriots once again kind of narrowed their focus, at least in the passing game. It was, if you're a Patriots fan, it was great to see Hogan, Dorsett, some of those other guys get opportunities in the passing game. And I think part of it was because, you know, Patterson was out, he was dealing with a knee issue, and they wanted to kind of get some other guys a little bit of work, and they're still trying to kind of find their footing when it comes to the post-Josh Gordon era. But I wouldn't be surprised if they narrowed their focus a little bit when it came to the postseason. I'm not saying that, again, you know, those guys aren't worthy targets, but as we've seen from Brady in the past, in big moments, he tends to go to his guys, whether it's Edelman, Gronkowski, James White, whatever the case may be.
We often look and say that the Patriots will have an advantage because of playoff experience, but David Andrews seemed to throw that notion out the window.
Yeah, he said it means absolutely nothing at this time of year. I think that we saw it last week from Lamar Jackson, who was clearly a little shook at the start of that one, maybe a bit overwhelmed by the idea of playing on the big stage at this time of year. And so I'm going to be fascinated to see how the younger players respond out of the gate. The one guy I really have my eye on, and I think the Chargers are going to have their eye on, is rookie cornerback J.C. Jackson. He's a guy who's going to be playing in his first postseason game. He sets up to be a guy who's going to be starting opposite Steph Gilmore. And when you consider the Patriots secondary, you look at Gilmore, McCourty, Chung, Harmon, all of those guys have been relatively solid this year. That's not to dismiss the work of J.C. Jackson, but if I'm Phillip Rivers, start looking around for the rookie and trying to, you know, maybe create some favorable matchups involving him.
And so you've got a veteran, the consummate professional quarterback in Phillip Rivers, Gordon a bit dinged up. Will the Patriots play aggressively, or will they sit back a little bit?
I think they're going to be a little more aggressive than usual. The matchup that I'm interested in seeing is Gilmore going to travel on Keenan Allen? And I think that's going to really tell the tale. That's going to go a long way toward determining what happens in this matchup. If Gilmore is able to play at the level he's, you know, been at over the last, really for most of the 2018 season, I think that bodes very well for the Patriots. The other thing that I want to really keep an eye on, and you mentioned Gordon, and he's a little bit slower. dinged up because of the knee. We don't know exactly where he is, at least at this point of the week. Is the tight end matchup, whether it's, you know, if Gates and how effective he can be at his age, and if Hunter Henry can play at all. I mean, he was activated this week, and when you consider the fact that Patriots have occasionally struggled against really good tight ends over the last year plus, I think that might present itself, again, if the Chargers are healthy and maybe where they want to be, that might present itself a little bit of an edge for Los Angeles.
Biggest health question about the Patriots might be Devin McCourty. What's the latest?
He's cleared to go. He talked to us the other day, which is always a good sign. And he said he's feeling okay. He was a little bit dinged up. For a guy who played so many snaps over the last few years, it was certainly eye-opening to see him kind of shut down there after the concussion issue. But he told us the other day he's feeling good. We asked him if he anticipates playing. He just kind of winked and said, you know, we'll see. I hope so, but we'll see. But look, he's going to play. He's one of the most important guys, you know, in terms of what they want to do defensively. So I'd be shocked if he wasn't out there on Sunday.
Christopher, you had a terrific piece in Boston Sports Journal about St. Thomas Aquinas down in Fort Lauderdale, George Smith, and the role that they'll play in whatever success the Patriots have this year.
That was fun to do. It really was. George Smith, a little background. George Smith is a legendary high school football coach in Fort Lauderdale at St. Thomas Aquinas, and has had guys leave his program and go on to bigger and better things in college and the pros. Michael Irvin is one name that comes to mind, but he was a high school coach for James White and Philip Dorsett. And he kind of shared some experiences with me, what it was like coaching those guys and how proud he is. And I love talking to high school coaches. I love talking to high school coaches of guys who've made it to the NFL. One of the things that struck me this past summer when it came to the Hall of Fame induction ceremony was the fact that so many guys thank their high school coaches. Mm. And I think it's really important to stress the fact that a good high school coach, look, not everyone's going to make the Hall of Fame. Not everyone's going to make the NFL or Major League Baseball or whatever the case may be. But a good high school coach can often set you on a path to success sooner rather than later. So it was fun to do. It was fun to talk to those guys about George Smith's influence on them. And it was fun to talk to Smith about where they started and how proud he is of them now going forward.
All right, can you give us one guy on offense, one on defense that you think need to play very well this weekend for the Patriots to be successful?
Offensively, I'm going to go with James White. I know it's a bit of a cop-out because he's been important to this team all year, but I think it's even more so now when you consider the stakes. This is a guy who I don't want to even think about where they would be offensively if he was not in the lineup. He's having a great season. He's my pick for regular season team MVP. And he needs to continue to play at a very high level for the reasons I mentioned before, but just because he's become so vital to what they want to get done offensively. Defensively, talked about the secondary, but I'm going to go in this case with Trey Flowers. Flowers, who's had a great year coming off the edge, he needs to be able to take his game to another level. It was fun talking to him in the locker room the other day because he said, I had a nightmare the other night that I wasn't able to set the edge. It was horrible. It was awful. So, you know, hopefully for him, there are no nightmares come Sunday against the Chargers. He's going to have to be his usual dominant self, getting consistent pressure on Phillip Rivers. The Patriots want to get to where they want to be ultimately.
Christopher Price of Boston Sports Journal talking Patriots here on Downtown. Best of show on a Sunday morning. When we come back, Stephen Tobolowsky talks with us about season 3 of One Day at a Time on Netflix. This is Downtown on Z62.
When it comes to your health, early detection is the best protection. That's why the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center provides 3D mammography to offer better answers and greater peace of mind, identifying problem areas that a standard mammogram might miss. It provides precise images for all women, including those with dense breast tissue. Call 907-1682 to schedule your 3D mammogram at the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center. 3D, providing peace of mind for you, your family, and your loved ones.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
There's only one way Hartley's Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Newport does business. The right way. Owned and operated for over 60 years by the Hartley family, Hartley's offers the same or even better prices and discounts on vehicles as those offered at mega dealerships. And along with that comes their renowned small dealer service and exceptional attitude toward you, their customers. Hartley's values your business and your trust. You're never pushed, never pressured. No one will chase you around the lot, but no one will ignore you either. Hartley's wants you to feel comfortable at their dealership. So feel free to look around, and Hartley's professional sales staff will always be there when you need help. You'll like the place, you'll like the people, and you'll like the way they do business. The right way. The folks at Hartley's wouldn't do it any other way. Always remember, if you're out there looking around, the best deals aren't in the city, they're in the country. Hartley's Country, at the Triangle in Newport. You'll always be treated the right way at Hartley's.
Now is the time of year to think about saving money around the house. And the experts at Penobscot Home Performance can lend a hand by doing a free energy audit. Whether it's insulation, heat pumps, a new heating system, windows, or doors, Penobscot Home Performance can point you in the right direction and provide you with professional advice and work from the best in the industry, and can also help you save with rebates from Efficiency Maine and more. Call today at 469-6100 for your free energy audit and visit online at PenobscotHomePerformance.com.
The Briar Patch in downtown Bangor welcomes you this holiday season. We've had the pleasure to grow up with your family for the past 30 years, specializing in books and toys for all aspects of your child's life, from birth to high school. We welcome the next generation and now stock a great selection of grown-up titles, too. Stop in and say hello 7 days a week. Gift certificates make great stocking stuffers. Like The Briar Patch on Facebook for great family events. The Briar Patch, 27 Central Street, downtown Bangor.
Downtown Orono has a new pub and eatery, the Common Loon Public House. The Common Loon is a casual, relaxed place for great food, drink, and company in the heart of the village, and the perfect spot for a proper pint and a hearty or healthy meal. Open 7 days a week with lunch on Thursday and Friday and breakfast on the weekends, the Common Loon Public House features an eclectic menu with influences from over the ocean and close to home, serving up favorites for lunch and dinner like fish and chips, poutine, and pub burgers. Don't miss Wing Night Wednesdays, live music Fridays, and weekend mornings. The menu features hard-to-find dishes such as a full English or Irish breakfast. We're also home to the only wood-fired brick oven in town and offer a variety of pizzas and British pasties. Enjoy a selection of imported beers, local brews, and signature cocktails. Happy hour specials 3 to 5 and after 9 every night. The Common Loon Public House is the place to be for EPL matches, international rugby, the Sox pennant race, Patriots, Bruins, and Black Bears. If you follow it, they can show it on their 7 HD screens. 36 Main Street in downtown Orono, the Common Loon Public House is the place to visit before, during, and after the game.
Penobscot Theater presents...
Welcome to the Wishy-Washy Washateria. What is your washing wish?
A quirky toe-tapping slice.
Yes, I know your mama's sick.
Of Americana.
There's absolutely nobody sicker than that woman.
Served up in a laundromat.
You can shove this job where the sun don't shine.
The main premiere of the Boot Scootin' musical, Honky Tonk Laundry.
Holy howdy doody.
January 31st through February 24th at Bangor's Historic Opera House. Tickets at 942-3333.
Oh, Lord.
And PenobscotTheater.org.
Give me strength.
This is it. This is life, the one you get to go and have a ball.
Hey, we're back on the Best of Downtown. February 8th, the date to circle on your calendar. Netflix will release in its entirety season 3 of the terrific reboot, reimagining, if you will, of Norman Lear's One Day at a Time. All right, our next guest, a part of that cast, is Dr. Leslie Berkowitz, and one of our favorites on the show, actor, author, and storyteller Stephen Tobolowsky. I understand some breaking news from the left coast that you've had some actual weather in Southern California.
We had what you call rain over here. So it was big news. I'm sure it's going to be on all the TV shows, all the headlines of the newspaper. We had rain, and it rained for more than an hour. So it's going to be huge news.
Wow. Now,
so we're thrilled.
Has that done anything to impact the squirrel situation around the Tobolowsky household?
As a matter of fact, yes. We had a squirrel encounter this morning. I went outside. I don't know if everybody in Bangor out there knows, but we have a squirrel that comes to our house. Actually, there's three of them. The person who lives next door, some squirrels fell out of a tree when they were babies, and she hand-reared them, and now these squirrels live in the neighborhood, and there's Violetta, who's the female. There's Klaus, which is the big male, and there's a squirrel called Little, which is so little, I don't know if it's male or female yet. But Violetta is quite friendly and understands, oh, there she is now. Damn it. She's right. She hears my voice, and she's coming toward the door. Oh, dear. So Anne and I, Anne is my wife, and she grew up in Georgia. So there's part of her that isn't, her mind isn't functioning the same way as normal people. So she goes out, and she pets the squirrel. You don't pet a wild squirrel, but she does. And so now Violetta is a hand-petting squirrel and a nut squirrel. And with the rain, I went outside this morning and said, are there any hungry squirrels in the area? And she ran down the tree and toward our house. It was really a Disney moment. Until we get the rabies shot, it's a Disney moment. It becomes something else.
You mentioned your lovely wife, Anne, and a belated congratulations as you two celebrated a big anniversary recently.
30 years. Can you believe that? You've been married to someone for 30 years, and this is something I talked to my dear friend David Chin about at his wedding. You know, as you get older, you begin to appreciate anniversaries more than birthdays, in that they both involve one rotation around the sun, you know, going around the sun that one time. But one is a matter of luck, and the other is a matter of determination and willpower. And I am so happy that Anne and I are still together, and we weathered the storms, and we're able to talk to each other about when we were young and both wanting to get into theater and get into acting. Now she's directing a lot of plays here in Los Angeles, and she's able to come with me on all my book tour things whenever she's free. And it's wonderful being married to your best friend. That's really good. It's a good thing.
Well, also a good thing is 1 month from tomorrow, we've been waiting, and that day is almost here. Season 3 of One Day at a Time will appear magically on Netflix on February 8th, and we are so excited for this new season.
Yeah, we've been going to various award ceremonies. I didn't go to the Golden Globes last night, but a lot of the One Day at a Time folks did. And at the last one we all went to, which was like a month ago, it seems like, not too long, I forget which awards it was, and we're going to Critics' Choice Awards this weekend. Gloria Calderon-Kellett and Mike Royce, who are showrunners, were saying as they were passing out the pasta, you know, at the party, is that, you know, Stephen, I think this season's going to be good. you always are both thrilled to hear that and also surprised that they were so surprised. Because you never know till you know. And we had a rip-snorting third season. And the first thing I could say, Rich, that surprised me, just talking about surprises, is our audience. When we did the first season, our audience, I think a lot of them were almost rentals. You pay everybody $5 to come in and sit in the seats and just enjoy or not enjoy the show. The second season, about half the people, and there's an audience of about 200-300 there, live audience when we shoot the show, about half of them were fans, people who really loved the show. This year, the third season, nobody could get in because of the fans. They started lining up early. We had several buses of fans from San Diego drive up to Los Angeles to see the show. And what happens when you have that fan audience everybody knows everybody in the show, and they're sitting on every character turn and twist. And one of the things that surprised me that I heard is that the editors for this season had to cut out some of the laughs, because when we do the show for the live audience, the audience is so receptive that it can break apart the narrative of the pacing of the show. I would say generally I felt being on stage doing this year's season three, I can, without doing spoilers, give you a few points. If you want to say season one and two were kind of an act one, establishing who the Alvarez family is and who all the characters are, season three is the beginning of an act two, in which we already know who these people are, and now season three are the consequences of who they are. So, and those consequences could both be hilarious or they can be dangerous. And that's what creates, what makes One Day at a Time such a special show on television, because it can be hilarious and then in 1 second it could turn on you and not be hilarious and be something that kind of really is heartbreaking. Just to give you kind of, again, an example without being a spoiler on it, at the end of last season, season two was a show which has been nominated by the Critics' Choice Awards as one of the best single episodes of television of last year, which was episode 13 of season two of One Day at a Time, in which Rita Moreno, who plays Lydia, the mother of the family, ends up in a medically induced coma in the hospital with having had some sort of stroke. And in it, it is funny but heart-wrenching episode. So this season, Rita and her character Lydia have to deal with the repercussions of what that was. As anybody who's been through a medical emergency knows, that from then on, everybody in the family is terrified that something is going to happen to them. And the person who has had, like when I had my heart surgery, my open heart surgery, every moment, if you've had it, you become terrified that you're going to end up in the hospital again. So this season, Act two of One Day at a Time really begins, where we see Lydia dealing with the consequences of having had a brush with the Grim Reaper.
Well, and
it's both hilarious and not hilarious.
That last episode was so frightening as a viewer, because you're so invested in all of these characters. But my goodness, Rita Moreno is just such a talent and such a treasure. And I was hanging on, tears streaming down my face watching that.
Yeah.
I'm also curious to see where Dr. Berkowitz's relationship goes, because you've sort of, your character has sort of explained to Lydia that you will take really whatever you can get, whatever that relationship is, your character is happy with.
Yes, and I don't want to spoil anything in terms of the plot, but again, that is a big part of season three, of where we go, where Lydia and I go this season. And it's logical, and it's very funny, and it is very surprising. And I think, and you have been, it's the opposite, Rich, it's the opposite of the way TV used to be. Because what's going to happen around February 8th is that Netflix is going to drop the entire season of One Day at a Time.
Right.
And people are going to be able to see all of these episodes at once, one at a time. When we shoot these shows, we don't know what's going to happen to our character. And so we get the scripts, and they hold the script. Friday was our shoot day this year. So we finished shooting the show, let's say Friday night 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night, we're done. That's when they hand out the scripts for the next week. And so the first time we know what's going to happen in the next week is right after we finish the show. And it can make some sleepless nights. Let me tell you, over the weekend, it can rock your boat when you see what's going to happen. I would almost say that this season three to me was one of our funniest seasons. There are some absolutely delightful situations that happen in the show that we had difficulty performing on stage because it was so funny. And it'll be very interesting to see how the editor cut around the laughter that we had in the audience. And lots of character surprises. One thing with the kids, you know, Alex and Elena, which is Manuel Ruiz and Isabella Gomez, the two kids, they're kind of growing up now. And so in this season, they're dealing with more growing up problems. And in the absence, we find that Alex sometimes has to be the man of the family, and in very surprising ways, which we were not prepared for in the script. So I think viewers of the show, if you're new to the show, let me explain this, that One Day at a Time is not a typical situation comedy in that it's not like a new weird story every week. It really is like a novel. And so I would say watch Netflix season 1 and 2 now so you're up to speed on the story, and then you'll be able to fully enjoy season 3 when you see where everybody is.
Yeah, the evolution of the characters through season 1 and season 2, and I think the evolution of the actors sort of getting to know each other a little bit better as they develop those characters too is evident. Yeah. So people would really want to start at the beginning of the
and also
of the series.
Also here's an example which I don't think is too much of a spoiler. It's the writers getting to know the actors as well. Mm-hmm. There was one episode in the scene. This is a Dr. Berkowitz situation. There's Violetta, the squirrel, is now staring at me. Oh dear.
She wants her time on the radio too.
It's so good on radio to know that there's a squirrel watching someone that's talking. There was a moment during one of the network run-throughs. What happens is you kind of block the show for yourself on Tuesday. You run it for the writers, and they make changes. On Wednesday, you do it for the network. And Netflix and Sony comes in and they give their notes. Thursday you do camera rehearsing. Friday you do it for the live audience. 5 days is all you got. So for the network run through, there was a moment Lydia and I have, and I ended up falling down. And I happened to have been trained in college in what they call stage combat, in how to do falls. And fall on things, fall over things. So during the network run-through, I happened to fall into, like the old Chevy Chase stuff on Saturday Night Live. Fall into a pile of chairs or something, and the chairs collapse, and you fall on the floor, and the legs and arms go. The people in the network run-through thought it was all for real, and they stood up, and they were horrified. And I had to, and it totally killed the run-through. I mean, it was not funny. And Mike and Gloria came running up to me, "Stephen, are you all right?" I said, "Guys, it was just acting. It was just show business. You know, it was fine." And so they kept the moment in where I fall in the scene. And then Mike came up and whispered to me and says, "You know, I think we're going to start adding some falls for Dr. You know, and so the writers get the idea, oh, this is what this person does. Let's throw this in. So, you know, there's some hair-raising moments in this season in which I am the butt of many physical jokes. And that will be a lot of fun, I think.
Now, you mentioned that the audience has changed and getting more active responding to the show. Does that change the way the actors respond to the audience and the characters? Is it changing the feel of the show in some way, do you think?
Yeah, completely. And some of it obviously is for the better, in that, you know, when Todd walks on as Schneider, you know, there's the Schneider fan club there in force and, you know, just shrieks. You know, he's so delightful in that part. He's so funny. But, you know, when he comes on to make an entrance, and if the audience is cheering and shouting for his entrance, he can't say his first line. You know, so it affects the timing of the actor of knowing, like, how are we going to, and then it'll eventually affect the writer, because they'll know, oh, there's probably going to be something that happens here that's going to put a kind of blip in the rhythm of this scene. So we have to prepare for that. So they affect us and we affect them. And it can be for the bad as well. Not bad. I mean, it's just showbiz. You know, if for example, there are many heartbreaking scenes in One Day at a Time that are really beautifully done. And like you were mentioning, Rich, last season, now the audience is so primed to know that the show has these moments in it. You have the oohs and the ahs.
Mm.
And, you know, they jump on a moment that they think is going to become an emotional scene with the, oh, you know, that thing. And when 200 people do that, it could kind of, again, take the wind out of the sails of the scene. And I think those oohs and ahs have to kind of be removed, you know, sound-wise.
Sure.
I don't know if you guys knew this. I may have said it on Downtown at one time, but it's a great history lesson. And that is, when I was doing Mr. Rhodes, that old show years ago for, I believe it was CBS or ABC, I think. Meg Mallon was our switcher. She's the person who's in charge of switching the cameras of the live feed for the audience to watch, so they feel they're watching a television show.
Right.
She is a technical person, but she learned her craft on I Love Lucy. Mm. That's when she started in show business. And she told me that Desi Arnaz was such a genius. He had recorded all of the laughter on I Love Lucy and all the audience reactions and the applause, et cetera, and every situation comedy uses the laughter of I Love Lucy to fill in the gaps of the live audience response.
That's right. Yeah, and Desi Arnaz really, didn't he? He pioneered the three-camera format.
Yes. He was the man who created the situation comedy. Well, there is an evolution, because before Desi Arnaz did it in TV, Jack Benny did it in radio. I think Jack Benny was the first guy who made all of the characters involved in his show like permanent members of the cast. Like, you had Dennis Day, and you had Don Wilson, and you had Rochester and his wife Mary. You had all these people, and they became regular characters on his radio show. And that then became translated into I Love Lucy, where that idea had been carried forth. And you have, you know, the Mertzes living across the hall, and then little Ricky when he came along. And so, so that that kind of format happen. So on our show, I'm sure in the background somewhere, you'll hear the warm recorded laughter from I Love Lucy as well.
That's wonderful. We're talking with Stephen Tobolowsky. Season 3 of One Day at a Time, available on Netflix 1 month from tomorrow. And I also understand, without giving away anything, there will be some special appearances this season. I know Gloria Estefan, who does the theme song, will be playing a character in at least a couple of episodes. And I think I read that Gloria Calderon Kellett is stepping out from behind the camera to also make an appearance.
Well, then I can't spoil that. Gloria is so great in the show. Gloria Calderon Kellett is so great. Her character is hilarious. And, yes, Gloria Estefan, in fact, we had a weird season in that we shot the shows one at a time, but we even shot them out of order. So we really didn't know what we were doing. They may open with the Gloria Estefan show, which is a wonderful show. And this ain't a spoiler. If you ever wanted to hear Gloria Estefan and Rita Moreno sing together, you will.
Wow.
And it is wonderful. It's one of those moments where I went and sat in the audience to watch this scene, and I got chills. It's just terrific. And I'm not sure if that's going to end up being the first show of the season or later. It was, I think, the fifth or sixth show we shot, but who knows which order it'll be in. But you'll know a month from today.
Now, I also saw recently on social media that you were up in Canada doing some work. Was that for a television show or a movie?
It was for a movie called Fracture, and it's going to be a Netflix movie. No relation, but Sam Worthington is the star of this. He was the star of Avatar, if you remember that. Mm. And it is kind of a really scary, kind of psychological horror show, not of the sci-fi variety, but basically a family is driving across country, and there is an accident. Sam is the father, and then there's his wife and their little girl, and the girl is hurt, and they bring her to a hospital, and I end up being the emergency. Again, I'm playing a doctor. I play the emergency doctor at the hospital. And I'm apparently their savior. I really helped the little girl, and I helped them. And we get the little girl to where she needs to go. She needs to get a CAT scan or something. And we send her down the elevator to where that's done. And I say, I'll get everything arranged. And I go off somewhere. And then they take the little girl downstairs. And then Sam wonders where I am. And he comes looking for me, and the woman at the front desk says, oh, his shift was over. He went home.
Mm.
What?
Mm.
He goes, well, they took my little girl downstairs, you know, and they say, what's downstairs? No, the CAT scan is up on the third floor. There's nothing downstairs. And thus begins this nightmare of him trying to find his little girl in this hospital, and nothing is quite what it seems. It is a pretty scary show. And I must say, when I got the script, it is a page turner. So that'll be Fracture on Netflix. And they're shooting now. They're still shooting, but I'm done. I'm done with Frozen North, I got to tell you. how cold did it get in Maine this winter?
We've had a number of nights where it's been down in the single digits, 3, 4, 5 degrees.
Yeah. Winnipeg, they were telling me that they were so thankful Anna and I came from California because we brought the warm weather with us, and we had some single digits too. They told us that this time when they're shooting right now, as they're shooting now, that it could get down like -40.
They call your hair is frozen. Hockey players call that the Winnipeg dew, because whenever they come out of a hockey game and they go out into the air, yeah, their hair freezes solid.
But I got to tell you, I loved Winnipeg. I loved Winnipeg. I thought it was, you know what, I think the Manitoba motto is friendly Manitoba, something like that. It is. The people there are so helpful and so nice, and it's kind of a big town on the edge of nothing, on the edge of the frontier. They have a train station that has three trains that leave every day. That's it. Three. You got three. You got one that goes to Vancouver. You got another one that goes to Toronto. And the third one goes north to Churchill to see the polar bears. And Churchill is like a two-hour train ride or something. But the woman who was my driver, I'm fractured, said that she was a driver for the polar bear tours. And she says she's been a driver there for 10 years, showing people the polar bears in Churchill. And she said that they've only lost six tourists in the last 10 years. And I thought, wait. Let's wind that back. Lost six tourists? And she goes, well, they were killed by the bear. I go, that's huge news. You have a tourist attraction where people are eaten by the bears, six of them. That's almost like one a year. And she says, well, polar bears, everybody thinks they're cute because they're so wide and the babies are so cute. But polar bears are the most dangerous bears on Earth. They're worse than grizzlies and Kodiaks because they're the only bear that kill for fun. And I'm going like, man, I'm not going to Churchill.
No, I will. I'll skip that tour, thank you.
Skip the trip.
Well, Stephen, it's always a delight for us to talk with you. Stephen Tobolowsky and One Day at a Time, Season 3 on Netflix on February 8th. Thank you, as always, for visiting with us this afternoon. Our best to Anne, and give a tip of the cap to Violetta and her family as well, please.
You got it very much, Rich. So good to talk to you again.
Stephen Tobolowsky here on The Best of Downtown. Watch out for those squirrels wherever you are. Pesky problem now. You're along the water. You get squirrels. What kind of critters are bothering the big complex over there in Haskell Woods?
We have squirrels, chipmunks. We get a lot of chipmunks. We'll have the occasional skunk, though. We don't seem to get a lot of those, thankfully. Turtles, deer.
Turtles.
We have turtles show up every once in a while.
Nice.
I think they go from the wetness of the marsh up above us. When it starts getting dry, they come down and head down towards the stream.
Fortunately, you have a cat who can handle all those intruders.
Well, hopefully he gives the turtles a wide berth.
Yes. If they're big ones, yeah, don't mess with them. Are they big, tough ones?
A couple of times they've been big ones. I remember when Victoria was very small, there was one that she wanted to get a little too close to. And ooh. I said, no. She's like four or five. I said, that's not a little petting turtle.
Take your finger right off. You don't want that at all. But the soup is good. Hey, that's going to wrap it up for us on a Sunday morning. Thanks for being with us. Thanks to Stephen Tobolowsky, Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe, and Chris Price from Boston Sports Journal. Join us tomorrow afternoon for Live Downtown. Chad Finn, Mike Lowe, the Portland Press Herald, Maine Basketball's Richard Barron, Alan Adams of the Maine Edge with movie reviews, and Tuesday, Richard Schiff from The West Wing, The Good Doctor, and much more. Terrifically talented actor will join us. Have a great rest of your weekend. We'll see you next time here on Downtown. You're gonna be all right.